Hello, and thank you for tuning in. You are listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. You can listen and subscribe to the show for free on Spotify, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, Blog Talk Radio, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and Audible. For network or show information, visit byteradio.me. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest is Jacob L. Cooper. Passionate about promoting healing, Jacob L. Cooper, best-selling author of Life After Breath and The Wisdom of Jacob's Ladder, is a sought-after speaker on grief, wisdom, and consciousness, offering meditation and mindfulness seminars to help others find purpose and overcome fears of life after death. As a clinical social worker, Reiki master, and certified hypnotherapist specializing in past life regression, Jacob uses his extensive personal and professional experience to empower one soul at a time. He also hosts the weekly podcast, The Wisdom of Jacob's Ladder. For more information, you can visit his website, which is jacoblcooper.com. You know that, I'd like to welcome Jacob to the show. Good day, Jacob.
Hi, good morning from New York to you. Thank you for having me on and for the good work that you do, Robert.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And I know that we have many common friends on Facebook. So, you know, it's always a sign to me that, you know, we are someone who is like-minded. So this is going to be a wonderful conversation. So let me start with, and it's kind of like almost the beginning, so to speak, but in your book, Life After Breath, How a Brush with Fatality Gave Me a Glimpse of Immortality, you describe an NDE, a near-death experience. So would you tell us about that experience and the impact that it had on your life? I believe it was at age 3, correct?
3 years old, in September of 1993, I was diagnosed with pertussis, otherwise known as whooping cough. I went to a playground with family's friends, climbed up into a ladder going onto a slide, just completely began suffocating due to this whooping cough. Everything shut down in my body and my brain, and I just felt my brain literally just snap in half. And once my brain cracked open, that's when, you know, so to speak, God came in, as this thing goes. But I had a lot of the classical near-death experiences that my friend Dr. Irvin Moody, who coined the term near-death experience, outlines in terms of the mystical, euphoric NDE, you know, I experienced, you know, past life awareness, my own spirit guides, angels that I saw, I was able to connect to, you know, in the words that we use, God, but it goes much more beyond those words and awareness of what I would be doing in this life and beyond. So it was a full-blown experience of euphoria, but just a recollection of all those, all the things that are around us that we're connected to at all times that sometimes we have our human blinders on that we forget. And it was a tremendous reunion with who I am and who we all are, which is divine, infinite spirits that can never die, that are connected to a beautiful tapestry of love and euphoria and angels, and it was just a tremendous recollection and reunion of my soul and coming back to its source.
Well, you know, for being age 3, that had to have been, an inexplicable kind of experience. So at age 3, did you kind of recognize exactly what was happening, or was it a lot of it in hindsight, you know, once you, you know, kind of got a grasp of certain concepts that you understood?
Yeah, you know, it's a complicated concept for most viewers to understand or comprehend, but when we say we are spiritual beings having human experiences, what does that mean? It just means that everything that we experience in this life is just an experience. It's not the full totality of our story of who we are. At our core, we are infinite, eternal, spiritual beings. And so this experience, you know, wasn't seen, you know, by a three-year-old. None of life really is. We're just experiencing ourselves temporarily in that age. At our core, we are infinite spirits, you know, that are timeless, that are ageless in many ways. And so this was just an experience of my eternal soul, not necessarily, you know, my chronological three-year-old body, you know. So the three-year-old was just something that I was experiencing within this lifetime, but it wasn't the full totality of who we are. And, you know, when we have past, we believe in reincarnation and past life, and we understand that not just one page of this book that you're looking at, your entire encyclopedia of experiences before this and sure experiences to come. So, you know, we just experience ourselves temporarily in our jobs and our genders and, you know, all these things of the story, but, you know, we're not the page of the book, we're the entirety of the book series itself, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And so now, after that experience, what has become your understanding of what a lot of people tend to call the other side?
You know, it's a lot, you know. I mean, for one hand, you know, after I had my NDE, you know, I just remembered how people would get so upset when someone died or crossed over, you know, or when they lost a loved one. I just couldn't understand the sadness behind it. As to why people would mourn. I mean, when I had my NDE, my stepmother, mother, you know, was in the hospital, and she was very distressed and crying. I just couldn't understand why she, you know, was like that. And, you know, as I get older, I understand the human part. You know, to me, grief is a human thing. It's not necessarily a thing of the soul. The soul really knows no death. It knows no grief. It knows that loved one is okay, and knows the, you know, connectivity of that loved one. So, you know, as I got older, in a way, I was able to understand the human perspective of this stuff. But, you know, from the soul's perspective, it really just told me the illusion of death, that, you know, death is a fiction. It doesn't exist. I mean, two things could be true at the same time. I mean, it exists on a human level, but on a soul level, going there firsthand and going through it, you know, I could fully attest that there is no such thing, you know, as death. It's just one transition, you know, as I say, from a solid into a gas, or however, you know, I'm going to call it, but it's a rebirth and a renewal. If anything, you know, it's an expansion where you're not limited by, you know, the five senses in the fifth dimension here in this body.
Yeah. So now, when it comes to people who have passed and who occupy that realm, is there a kind of like a hierarchy, so to speak, of, you know, what their experience is? I mean, you know, does what they experience in that realm, is it guided by much of their latest human experience, you know, as to kind of whether they, you know, stay in touch with, you know, those here in this plane, or whether they, you know, go on and do, you know, their next, you know, incarnation, or whether they work over there, you know, kind of like, is there just a wide variety of activity, so to speak, in that realm?
I mean, you know, certainly, you know, for instance, evidentially, you could look at, you know, mediumship readings, and as I have been throughout my lifetime, you know, when I get an evidential reading, you know, I just notice that when it's spot on, you know, my loved one will come to me, let's just say, and will just kind of show me the things that they're doing over here that they're doing over there. And, you know, I think how we live in many ways is how we die in some ways in our afterlife. It does impact it to a degree. Now, it's not all that we do. I mean, for instance, if, you know, my grandfather fish, and oftentimes I see him in my dreams fishing, or he comes to me in readings doing fishing. So, you know, our afterlife is impacted by the things that we love over here, the things that we do. Now, this isn't only one story, so, you know, that could be other stuff from other different lifetimes too, which is complicated to understand. But beyond that, you know, when I had my MBE, I was just in a realm of light. I was able to see, you know, kind of like an overlaying energy of this reality that was just very heightened. But beyond that was another level of light realm that I entered. And so, you know, what I'm trying to say is I think if you're very connected, you know, to this light realm, you know, you're more likely to kind of gravitate to that on the other side. There's more uniformity of who you were, what you were connected to. But certainly it's a buffet of experiences that people could choose to have and experience over there as they experience over here. But, you know, a lot of it has to do with vibrational frequencies. You know, when I went to the other side, all I experienced was just the vibrational frequencies changes. And I think the more in tune you are, you know, with the higher creative sources, that's kind of where you'll go to on the other side. So to me, there's different levels, and it's not worse or better, but the key is as well to be more uniform of who you are, which is love, which is, you know, beauty, which is, you know, unconditional understanding and that divine spark within. And so hopefully in each lifetime we have a fuller, grander experience of that part of us, and we're able to kind of chip away all those things that, you know, maybe separations of identity that we hold on to and experience in this life and in lifetime.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that makes sense. That makes sense that it's, you know, the fact that it's vibrational, you know, and that one's experience both here and there, are basically a result of what that vibration. Now, in your, book, Life After Breath, you talk about, the idea of connected awareness. So can you, and obviously it's from the human perspective, but can you talk about, you know, about that idea and how does that impact how we live?
Yeah, you know, the spirit realm for many people is just kind of like, where can I see it? Where can I find it? What is it? And certainly when we're coming with our five senses, you know, the unseen forces, it's difficult to understand. I mean, certainly I deal with it all day as a mental health therapist, where people aren't able to really point at or understand mental health. And you know, certainly when we understand the brain, we can understand that brain health is mental health and get into that, you know, a little bit. But I think for people to understand the spirit realm, it's really kind of like the analogy that I have. It's kind of like Wi-Fi. You know, when you tune into it, you know, things are smooth and things are flowing, and you might have four or five bars. And if you're disconnected, there's too many barriers, you might have one or two. I'm a big brain guy, and so when I had my near-death experience, what fascinated me was the barrier between the spirit realm and this realm. And to me, that was just the brain. You know, once my brain really snapped in half and my body stopped working, that's when I was able to fully cross over. You know, and so the understanding that I have is, you know, that we could really be the filters between the two worlds, which really the brain is a filter. I mean, people think of the brain and the mind as just something of the same. And material reductionism, we'll say that as well, that once the brain goes, once the body goes, so do we go. And you get the experience come into the play, and they say, well, we're non-existent or very low, and yet they have these had an experience, which is someone who was on LSD or someone who was on a hallucinogenic or in hospice care, and they have their own experiences, you know, of their awareness. And so I think really it's learning how to really allow the brain to not be that blockage, you know, point, you know, but rather, you know, just that clean filter. And I certainly believe the quieter we become, the more that we could hear and see, if that makes sense. And so that really parlays a lot of my work, you know, in, you know, getting quiet so we could really hear louder and more impactful things that could be of useful. But, you know, it's a balance where we have to have that spirit part, and we also have to be very connected here all around the surface. And otherwise, what would be the point of being alive if we were just connected over there the whole time and not connected to here?
Yeah, no, I agree. You know, and, you know, I often wonder about those folks who so heavily rely on, you know, the connection, you know, to the other side, and just how much of life they're missing by, you know, connecting to there rather than connecting to here.
Oh, my God. And, you know, it's just certainly a segue to the title of the show. And true to form, I'm sure you live that way. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. At least beyond my NDE, when I look back on my life, like, what's the most spiritual experiences that I've had? You know, and it hasn't been from escapism. It hasn't been from transcending. I mean, those are all cool, good experiences. But the deepest spiritual experiences I've had, you know, from moments of this life and relationships that I build and experiences that I have and passions that I have, you know, to me, that is where the most spirituality comes from in this reality. And so I think within the New Age movement, there's a lot of emphasis on bypassing this reality, bypassing pain, bypassing emotions, bypassing, you know, this lifetime and just doing everything we can to escape it. And it's through the depths of our experiences that we're actually able to really, you know, as I said before, not only transcend our afterlife, but really transcend this lifetime. And that, to me, brings heaven on earth. You know, it takes the mundane experiences to the eye, and we can make them sacred, you know.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, the idea of, to me, it's the idea of bringing, you know, something that is within the realm of formless, you know, into, you know, this reality. To me, it seems like it's like a, you know, transformational kind of energy, the ability to, you know, to create something out of nothing.
Oh, yeah. You know, say create, you know, that is who we are in a nutshell. We're creative life force energy from, you know, the eternal creator itself. And certainly I experienced that in my NDE, where it's just the centerpiece of creation, where all life flowed from and was forever connected to, this eternal source of creative energy. The ultimate giver of life, you know, is what we call God, and I've certainly experienced that. And I think in our lives, we could, you know, really forget that part of us, and certainly we could live a godless life, or, again, we could live that connected life where we look at life through that God lens, through emphasis on compassion and beauty-seeking and seeing past the surface, or we could be very human and just see, you know, life on a very surface level and not be able to see the beauty and the depths and the greater tapestry of us is presented to the eyes and ears and the senses. So.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. There was another statement in your book that I found interesting, and that is, sometimes to find ourselves, we have to lose ourselves. And I just, you know, there are just so many people that I know who feel lost, you know, in this right now in the state of affairs. So can you maybe, you know, talk a little bit about that and you know, how those who feel lost, you know, can use that to transform?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a trajectory of development, you know, in a lot of cultural messages, you know, societal messages, certainly for us living in the Western world, you know, we're prescribed certain steps to take to find ourselves, or certain steps to take to find ultimate happiness, you know, and what happens is Carl Jung would say, we get to that morning of life and we get to that top of that morning and we're just like, you know, geez, I've checked off every box that you told me. I got the car, I got the spouse, I got the job, and, you know, how come I don't feel connected to myself, and how come I don't have happiness? You know, and then there are people who do that and they have a midlife crisis, you know, so to speak, and they just feel very lost. And they recognize, geez, all the things that I'm looking for, I'm not outside of myself, but are in myself. And so it's not so much in the empty doing, but it's in the being while we're doing. And that's the afternoon of life, where it's about, you know, mindfulness. It's about awareness. It's about connecting to within, you know. And so I think really to lose ourselves, it's not only just to lose, you know, who we think we are in that box, that ego, but also all those things that we might have been told that really, you know, don't add up, and to be able to be willing to explore. You know, and I give the analogy where the box of who we are is kind of like, you know, the box of reality of history. You know, back in the day, you know, people thought the world was flat, and that's what they saw, and that's all that they saw, and that was it. And there was no assumption beyond that. But when people say, well, wait a minute, I don't really think it's that. Let's explore those things. And they lost that, you know, box of reality. They found the world was, you know, round and in a big, beautiful place. And from losing that grasp of reality, they were able to find a new one. And I think for ourselves, we have to be willing to do that every day. We're like, oh, you know, I'm not just this box. I'm eternally expansive. My bandwidth of elasticity is eternal. And so each and every day, we could find a way to explore the nature of ourselves and the nature of reality in a different way. On a very basic human level, I mean, sure, you know, some things are pretty fixed, and that's kind of what's called temperament theory, where there's a part of us before we get here in this body just kind of fixed in who we are, but most of us is very flexible, you know, in our explorations and our ability to metamorphosize and change. And we wouldn't be here if that wasn't a possibility. So I think it's having the courageousness to be able to be vulnerable, to look past, you know, how we see ourselves in reality, and the beauty of finding something new. And my near-death experience certainly epitomizes that, where I lost everything and then I found everything. You know, from going to the centerpiece of emptiness and suffocation of everything that made me human, which is, you know, our breath and life force in this body itself, I was able to find the illusion that, you know, all of life does not stem from this body, it just moves through it temporarily, and it's just, you know, a temporary experience of the soul. That's it.
Yeah, great. Well, we're about halfway through the show, Jacob, so I want to take just a quick 90-second break, and then when we come back, kind of want to move into talking about your book, The Wisdom of Jacob's Ladder, okay?
Great.
Okay, everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder, we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to the more than 1,700 shows we have aired during the past 13 years. Also on the site are links to the products and services we provide, books, photography products and services, calendars and greeting cards. There is also a link to our account at Fine Art America, where you can purchase items such as mugs, prints, pillows, and more. Our show is available as a free podcast on multiple platforms, such as iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, and Audible, with icons to each platform on our homepage. We are also available on social media platforms, such as Facebook, X, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Threads. Our website, www.biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us again today. My special guest is Jacob L. Cooper, and we're talking about his journey as well as his book, Life After Breath, and The Wisdom of Jacob's Ladder. Again, you can find out more by visiting his website, which is jacoblcooper.com. And also on that site, you'll be able to see some of his wonderful YouTube videos. So definitely go check that out. Okay, with that, we're back. Jacob?
Hello.
Great. Okay, so The Wisdom of Jacob's Ladder. Tell us what inspired you to write this particular book.
Yeah, I mean, so many things. You know, I think really Life After Breath, you know, had certainly more of a personalized memoir component where I was introducing myself to the, you know, reading community and really able to explain my story and the trajectory of it. And, you know, The Wisdom of Jacob's Ladder is kind of like the analogy where you climb a mountain and you go up on this high apex, but then you have to come back from the mountain and give people, you know, some of that information, what you saw, what you experienced. And for me, The Wisdom of Jacob's Ladder is kind of how it sounds, where, you know, you think of a ladder, you think of different rungs. You know, you think of Jacob from the Bible, who had his dream of the angels going up and down the ladder from the, you know, earth to the heavens. You know, it's just, you know, kind of like a, you know, a map to really get to heaven while not dying, so to speak. You know, so not asking to wait to remember who we are and the connectivity that we have so that we could have, you know, different ways to really connect to it, you know, in our own unique ways. So that's kind of the Wisdom of Jacob's Ladder's premise. It's just the different lessons and different understandings from the other side that I have to this side, and it touches on areas of a lot of questions that I've had throughout, the years, such as deep issues such as mental health, even touches on areas of suicide, touches on grief, it touches on ways to apply some of these things. Because oftentimes people will say, well, you had a near-death experience, I didn't have one, so I can't really relate to it, and how do I have a self-induced near-death experience, to understand what you're having? And so all these things are really I hope that they are able to answer a lot of people's inquiries as to how to get to heaven while not dying.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. Now, in the book, you indicate that you became aware of the power of choice. I believe, when you had the NDE, it was, do I stay or do I go now kind of thing. Can you talk about, because sometimes people find themselves in situations where they feel that they have no choice. So can you talk about, the power of choice and for those who maybe feel that they don't have that, how they can kind of, switch their perspective?
Well, I think it really comes down to the power of beliefs and how limiting or unlimiting our belief systems are. And certainly we can look at historical examples, of exemplary figures to understand what is possible in the human journey, the human spirit. Certainly within this lifetime, I've come from the Jewish faith and, come from, people who were unfortunately killed in the Holocaust. And that's certainly an era that really speaks to me for many different reasons. But one, particular individual who was in the Holocaust, he was a psychiatrist, Swiss psychiatrist by the name of Viktor E. Frankl, who wrote the book, Man's Search for Meaning, and when Viktor, was in the Holocaust, with every possible freedom taken from him, that you can name of, any other person, in the camps, no food, no water, no heat, no clothing, family, I will spare the details for viewers' sake, but, he said within those moments he was able to have the ultimate freedom, and people could say, wow, that was impossible. You were taken away everything. You had every possible, reason to feel indentured and enslaved to, the situation. He said, no, the freedom to really choose my attitude, my approaches, and what he calls, kind of like that space between that stimuli and response. And so, look, Viktor was certainly an exemplary figure. He had, I'm sure, experiences to reference from, maybe his own life and stuff like that. And that's an extreme way of presenting it, but it also presents the possibility of us, and the human potential that we could have almost everything being taken from us and we could experience total freedom, or we could have everything, we could experience total, enslavement. And, really, I think I've learned that life is very much an inside job. That we have the ability to really decide to choose, to be our own liberators, our own, prison guards in our life. And so, I wouldn't be in the mental health if it wasn't possible for people to really be able to gain control, to some degree of their lives and their decisions and their approaches and their regulations. And certainly, there's a lot of genetic, epigenetical factors, neurological components to this that may make that, more difficult than the next person. But to some degree, people can move that needle of autonomy and freedom in their lives, and emotional freedom once they remember that understanding. And so, it's pivotal, the relationship of information and behaviors. And we see we are in safety situations, our behaviors will follow such. And we'll see it's a possibility that we have freedom, then we'll be able to really be able to explore the possibility of how we could liberate ourselves and have, more free choices in our life.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, and, definitely starting from within and, keeping in mind that extreme experience, the Holocaust experience, is a way to really kind of bring home the realization that, despite outside appearances or outside happenings, that inside, we have that freedom to be able to to react in positive ways.
Yeah, no, it's a great North Star exemplary situation. But, you know, I think the spark within almost everyone is within us. And, you know, Jesus referenced that the kingdom of heaven is in me than you. And I think really it comes down to self-esteem and how we are able to remember our own superpowers. I think sometimes when we see, you know, someone like Victor who's outside of ourselves, you think is totally on this pedestal, then maybe you're right. Then you say, hey, maybe it's possible that he and I have something in common, you know, and there's something in him that's in me too. You know, then I could maybe not achieve what he did in his situation, but I could get something that's better than I had today, you know. And so people need to remember that we all have a divine spark. We all have something magnificent in us, in a creative, our spark is, when connected to, is the, you know, most unique spark that we could do. I mean, no one could do us like we can, if that makes sense. No one could do you like you.
Exactly. That's good. So now, one of your specialties is past life regression, as I mentioned in the introduction. So can you tell us a little bit about what sparked your interest, you know, in past life regressions, and how would those benefit us in the here and now?
Yeah, you know, because it's funny, when you say past, people often say, well, what does that have to do with the here and now? My brother will say, Jesus, you know, I'm not focused on the past. I mean, who cares about this life? You know, there's many angles I could take to it, but what I'll say is this. As a therapist, you know, there's solution-focused therapy. We focus more on here and now and solutions to things. We're not getting psychoanalytic, or stuff like that. But then there comes to a point of therapy where, you know, people, you recognize what they're experiencing now is a repetitive pattern from a, you know, point or pathology that happened, you know, potentially very early in their life. And so you have to go to that wound and you have to clear it out. You can't just talk about, you know, here right now, you know, that's just kind of like treating the surface of the symptom. It's not really going to the root cause. You know, so it's like kind of like functional medicine, you know, instead of, medicating the surface, you're going to the point of origin of what's going on. Now, and so past life regression has that component to it where it's not all pathologized, but in a sense how it could help you in the here and now, where you're able to really understand, you know, maybe something you're going through from a mental health component, a physical component that's just not explainable in this lifetime. And, you know, really that has to do with a lot of memories that go beyond the conscious mind, the things that we're aware of in this moment, you know, that, and that parlays itself to this higher subconscious mind. You know, and so I think really it allows people to have a greater understanding of maybe something that they may be holding on to, better or worse, that they could, you know, enhance or they could really reduce in this lifetime, so they could be more present, you know, instead of, you know, just unconsciously creating the same patterns lifetime in, lifetime out, so they could be more present in their lives and being able to be, held back from, you know, subconscious patterns that may be holding them back.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
In terms of what got me interested in it, I mean, certainly my NDE and when I was able to see other past lives in it, in my own life review, which is fascinating, but also subsequently I kept on having dreams and experiences of this one lifetime that came up to me so constantly, and it was just, it wasn't like I termed it past life or psychic experience, it was just, you know, something annoying where I just wanted to move forward, but they kept on coming back to me. You know, then one day when I was like around probably 19 years old, I went to this intuitive in the middle of nowhere, and she just saw through me like an x-ray machine. Even the thought that I had prior to coming to her office, she was able to say loud and clear. And that's in, you know, my book, Life After Breath. But she was able to really pick up on exactly what I saw in that lifetime and just kind of validated to me, you know, how real and true this is. But also, you know, it's just kind of like once I was able to embrace that message, that lesson wasn't needed to be repeated. And so for me, I was able to understand, all right, you know, that happened, and I'm able to really understand that the current moment in my lifetime is related to that. And I understood that lifetime was a lifetime in which, you know, I was in a lot of pain and my back was against the wall and I just, you know, completed suicide. And I don't say commit because it's not I don't have criminalization over it. It's, you know, certainly it could feel like that if you do lose a loved one, but that's not my perspective. Normally it has to do with a lot of pain and suffering, and it's just a way to kind of end it. It just becomes too much for a person. And, you know, there's a lot of different avenues of it. It's not all mental health. It could be physical that leads to it, stuff like that. But I had that same exact feeling in my NDE where I just felt, again, I felt that same degree of suffocation in my NDE and that life force deprivation. And then I surrendered, you know, to this breath beyond this breath of the body that I call the breath of eternity. And that's when really life opened up to me. And so that's really what I try to do with my clients is when we're struggling and when we're hitting that wall, to find that point of surrender. And to see surrender is really giving into our own power and the power that is always inside of us to propel us through that moment where we're stuck, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. Now, speaking of another tool in your tool chest, your psychotherapy practice, you've come to value a process called exposure therapy. And I believe that is to deal with fears. So can you, am I correct in that? And can you tell us about when you use that approach?
Yeah, I mean, that could be used to a plethora of things. It could be used towards phobias, anxiety. I mean, you know, for instance, I once had a client that was, you know, terribly afraid of planes, and then we just started talking about planes, and maybe had some sensory sounds about it, and eventually was able to go on an airplane, and, you know, sure enough, he became a pilot, you know, like years later. And so he was able to, like, fly planes and went to the training. So that was an extreme example of a transformation. But, you know, in a sense, you know, I think some people in our society feel, oh, my God, you know, my anxiety is going to get better when I avoid the source of my discomfort. That's when I'll feel more comfortable. And, you know, really short term, you have a big spike of anxiety when you enter, you know, that thing that's causing you more fear. But actually long term, through rewiring, you know, your brain and your viewpoints towards that trigger or that situation, you're able to really decrease a lot of that, you know, long term. So I think people, when they understand mental health, they understand the short-term and long-term of it. I mean, it's not always comfortable, but by having a spike usually, and not too extreme, but some degrees of that spike is when you're able to really see a drop, you know, eventually, and to have new pathways, you know, to view that trigger and to find safety perspectives, you know. So, again, it's all about how you frame things. I mean, someone could go into a room, and, you know, that room could be a beautiful place, and another person could go into the room, and it could remind them of, you know, God knows what, you know, or someone could, you know, have some degree of transference in them. And so, you know, our stories that we have and our experiences that we have could similarly be great deals of projections of experiences. We're able to reduce things at their core because a lot easier and more friendly than this. And so, that's what I do on a micro, one-to-one basis. But on a macro basis, in my books and my talk, I talk about the ultimate exposure, which is death, which is, you know, normally top five fear that people have. And I think through talking about it, through exposing people to talk about it, to ponder it, to think about it, you know, in a sense, I've seen people to be able to have more life, that they're able to look at life in a different way and understand it. I mean, certainly the impermanence of our human experience here could be seen in trepidation, or it could be seen to be like, wow, I don't have a lot of time here. I have to make the most of it. I have to develop a purpose, and I can't take things for granted. And certainly my NDE told me that our experiences here are not for granted, and anything could happen at any given moment in time. So you just have to make the most of it and, you know, not live in a paralyzed way, in a very neurotic way that so many people have, where they're fearing death, but really they're living in death that way, you know.
Yeah. Now, you in that particular case, we weren't talking about the death perspective, you know, that's not one that you want to create NDEs as far as when it comes to exposure therapy. So that's
I'm not a Dr. Kevorkian type. I don't endorse that. You know, and I think that's happened to me before, where people really want to. It's just kind of like a Six Flags amusement park ride where they want to have it and they want to go through all that, and so. You know, that's not the actual death that I'm talking about, but more so, you know, death, what does it mean? It just means a complete ending of something. And,
right.
You know, I think, to me, there is no such thing as a death of the soul, you know, that goes on, you know. So the word itself carries a lot of illusions. It's a funny thing.
Yeah. Now we're down to the last 5 minutes here, Jacob. Now, with, you know, your book, The Wisdom of Jacob's Ladder, excuse me, I believe was written during the pandemic or right around that time. So, you know, during that time, you know, the world really experienced, you know, paradigms kind of completely shifting and structures that we once believed in being shattered and new ones kind of being formed. So, you know, with the state that we're in right now, you know, with conflicts, divisiveness, many people, not many people, but there are people who will absorb that anxiety, will become anxious because of those things going on around us. Can you, what would be your advice to those who, you know, feel that anxiety? What would your advice be to help alleviate that?
First of all, it's understand that you're not alone. You know, I think everyone, you know, experiences that to a degree, and they don't say that they're kidding themselves, you know, because this has been a very challenging year. So we've all had our moments, our very human moments, and that's okay. You know, and those moments are necessary in many ways. But to understand the differentiation of our power, where we could absorb everything, as you said, and certainly as empathic beings, you know, that's a natural kind of flex that we have. We constantly do that. You know, or we could really observe things. And that's where we have a lot more control. And I think it's important for people to have a balance of being informed by things but not enslaved by things. And but beyond that, it's to understand the ultimate reality, you know, that we might be going through some turbulence, but does not mean that the world is coming to an end. Much like, you know, if you look at the clouds in the sky, you know, for a couple of weeks or months or whatever, there might be rain periodically and the clouds might be, you know, very congested or whatever. But does not mean, you know, that we're doom and gloom. It just means that we're going through a metamorphosis and a change. And some of the muck, you know, is coming up onto the surface in a lot of ways. And, you know, it just allows some stuff to kind of run their cycles and to give examples of maybe what not to do, what does not work. But we have to understand that our own microcosm impacts the macrocosm. And so I think people have to think globally by acting locally. And so we could use a lot of this situation, feel quite powerless, we could give up, we could give in, we could have apathy. You could say, geez, you know, there's a lot of darkness, you know, going around. I might be a light. And if I think of each person, remember that they have a light in themselves, and they're connected to that light, and turn that light on, and imagine this beautiful light that we could connect and cast its own beauty on the darkness that presents to us. And so I think really, you know, it could cause paralysis or it could cause people to really tune in deeper and connect to that light and to really shine a beautiful light, you know, on, you know, a dark moment. But just understand things have cycles and stuff like that. But, you know, each person, if they would take responsibility of that, that'd be more important. Now, I mean, my own personal life, you know, who am I kidding? You know, there's been moments, sure, where I've been frustrated or I've argued with maybe someone on the other side or I just felt, you know, anger towards it. And sure, we all feel that. But I think it's important to really understand maybe where we're coming from. If we're coming from that place of anger, you know, we're connected to that. And you notice at certain points when we feel, you know, happier, more emotionally, you know, connected, you know, and our brain is flowing, we're checking up our coping skills, there's more tolerance that we have. And so I think a lot of it has to do with our own just ability to connect. And when we're more connected, we have more space for compassion, for empathy, for understanding, and just being able to just let things go. But when we're kind of feeling, you know, a little bit lower vibration, that's when we may be more susceptible to just get more snippy or kind of like focused on all these dark things because there's a magnetism. So I would say don't look outside to really solve things. You have to look within, and you have to really start to connect on a deeper level when those winds are coming this, you know, the fastest and strongest way. If that makes sense.
Great. Great. Well, gosh, our time is up, Jacob. I appreciate you spending time with us and getting to know you better. Now, I indicated that you host a podcast, The Wisdom of Jacob's Ladder. Where would people go to find that?
You know, primarily YouTube, but, you know, Spotify, you know, iHeart, iTunes, I believe, you know, on so, I think Google as well, so they could find that, you know, the Wisdom Jacob's Ladder. And, you know, if they're interested in my books, you know, they're both on Amazon, primarily the Wisdom Jacob's Ladder, Christ After Breath, you know, and they want to contact me, they could follow me on social, Jacob Cooper, LCSW, or they could go to my website at jacoblcooper.com for any private, you know, bookings or any events, you know, that I could be hosted at. I will be at the Forever Family Foundation retreat this upcoming week, as well as the Helping Parents Heal Conference, and I have Lilydale coming up as well that I'm presenting at. That's all there on my webpage.
Great. Well, thank you very much for your time, Jacob. I really appreciate it.
And, thank you, Robert, for all the great work that you do.
Thank you very much. Again, everyone, today my special guest has been Jacob L. Cooper, and we've been talking about his journey as well as his books, Life After Breath and the Wisdom of Jacob's Ladder. And as he mentioned, you can go to his website, jacoblcooper.com, for more information about those books as well as events. So, everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth Show. And until we meet again, thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to BikeRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth Show. To become a show follower, visit www.blogtalkradio.com/BikeRadioMe and click on the follow link. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at BikeRadioMe. Be sure to visit our website at www.BikeRadio.me. That's BikeRadio.me. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.